Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code CanadaLand at checkout to get 10% off.
Denise Balcassoon, who are you writing for these days?
I'm doing most of my stuff for The Globe. I'm doing some stuff for Chatelaine. There's a new editor-in-chief of Chatelaine.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that? Leanne George?
From The Grid.
Yeah, former Grid editor.
I did see that, yes.
Yep.
Welcome back to Shortcuts.
Oh, thank you.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Julian Patet, Graham Slott, Alex Drobyshev, Greg Houston, Dan Scott, Kevin Dwyer, Rita Smith, Belle Unruh, and Michelle Champagne. Michelle, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because the minds of young guns should never be wasted, and they should be heard and put up and out, and they should be debated. And I support Canada Land because it's restless.
This episode is also brought to you by Squarespace. Denise, you've got an online and physical magazine, The Ethnic Isle.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not physical yet. It will be. It will be next year. We'll do our first print edition.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you have a Patreon for that effort.
Yes,
that I
we
just
do.
Was happy to support today, and everybody else should go check it out.
Thank you.
But you got a beautiful website.
Mm-hmm.
How did you make the website?
It's on Squarespace.
We didn't talk about this beforehand, but I had a look. I'm like, that. It's beautiful and simple, and it looks like a Squarespace design site.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't design it. Our designer's name is Simon Yao, and so he did make a beautiful site. And Squarespace is fairly easy for someone like me to use, so there you go.
Simple, powerful, beautiful, 24/7 support via live chat and email. And are you on the $8 a month plan? Is that the one?
You know? Simon knows.
Simon
not
knows.
Me.
So, yeah, it starts at $8 a month, and you get a free domain if you sign up for a year to Squarespace. It's got responsive design, so you design it once, and it'll work on a tablet, on a phone. It'll adjust itself based on how people are viewing it. And you can do e-commerce on any Squarespace site. It comes with its free online store. You know, you have a wonderful designer. If you don't have a wonderful designer, Squarespace has wonderful designers. You can just pick your favorite design and put your content into it. So do this if you need a website. Start a trial with no credit card required. Start building your website today. And when you do sign up, make sure to use the offer code CanadaLand. You'll get 10% off of your purchase, and you will be showing your support for this show. Squarespace, build it beautiful. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. So, Denise, Bono. Just kidding. No, we're not going to do that.
Okay, good.
No Bono. That's my hashtag, no Bono.
Defamation case against former Olympic boss John Furlong filed by freelance journalist Laura Robinson begins today. Robinson wrote an article about Furlong published in the Georgia Strait newspaper 3 years ago. It alleged Furlong had abused students at a Burns Lake Catholic school 40 years ago.
Having experienced this reporter on many occasions in the past, this feels very much like a personal vendetta. Prior to the Olympic Games, I was advised that for a payment, it could be made to go away.
Robinson denied Furlong's allegations. He sued her and the Georgia Strait. Eventually, he dropped both lawsuits.
Defending the lawsuit against her from Furlong cost her $150,000. Robinson is having a tough time given Furlong's comments, which damaged her reputation. A tough time getting her stories published.
Denise, are you following this trial? It's on right now.
I am.
I think Laura Robinson is on the stand as we speak. I think she might be getting cross-examined right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you make of everything that's happening?
I think it's pretty interesting that now what's left is her suit against him. But, I mean, she needs the money aside from her reputation.
If she wins, my understanding is that she has to prove the damage to her career. But what she spent defending herself against his suit, which he dropped, that's not anything she can get compensation for.
Good for her sticking up for herself. I mean, she tried in her reporting to get in touch with him a bunch of times. And the whole basis of his suit was that she was not a responsible reporter. I guess that's it. It seems to me that she tried to do a pretty thorough job. But then I don't know, did anyone ever find out why the Star decided not to go with her story? Like why they decided not to publish it?
Yeah, I think they presented into evidence an email from the Star saying, and it rang very familiar to me, because I received an email from Kevin Donovan of the Star that very similarly said, it's not that we don't think that this isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they said was in the email that she got, squeamishness on high, that somebody in the top offices was squeamish about the story and about the ability to defend the story in court. Nobody doubted the truth of the story. But it's interesting because, you know, with these accusations and counter-accusations, there's a lot of background to this. And if you're confused by what we're talking about, rather than try to synopsize the entire thing, there's an episode of CanadaLand where I interview Laura Robinson about her expose of John Furlong and the allegations by many, many First Nations Canadians that he abused them physically. There were accusations of sexual abuse. That was not a part of Laura Robinson's journalism. Those were independent. And it's interesting, when he was filing a libel claim against her, had that actually gone to court, then he would have, in effect, been putting himself on trial.
Right.
you know, because truth is a defense against a libel claim. It's consistent with what a innocent person would do. Mm-hmm. This is not true and I'm suing.
But then they never bring it.
They never
like
bring it.
Like a Ford brother.
Right. It never actually ends up in court because then the person they're suing is going to go and they can bring in all kinds of evidence that didn't even make it into the actual piece of journalism. And Laura Robinson, then it would have been about John Furlong's past and what he did do.
Well, so her lawyer is saying that he never intended to go through with his libel suit, right? That he just brought it as a way to have the media coverage be a chance for him to clear his name in the court of public opinion and never mind what happens in the actual court of law.
Whether I think that's right or not, that is a technique that is used. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you could argue that it was very strategic what he did because he sued the Georgia Strait, the newspaper that published her, and her. But when he found out that the Georgia Strait's libel insurance did not cover Laura Robinson, he dropped the suit against the Georgia Strait.
Right. Yeah.
He kept the suit against her.
Right. And so that's what I guess what I meant when I said good for her is that she's sticking up for herself and she believes in her own work, apparently. And I think that's pretty great. I think you and I have talked on this show before about the vulnerability of freelancers, right?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we're often not covered by libel coverage by whichever publication we do our stories for. To me, it just shows that she believes in her work and...
Yeah, and it really
that means
brings
a lot
up,
to me.
I mean, I feel bad for her that she has to, in proving damages, she has to prove that her income has taken a hit, which it did. I mean, she went from earning $52,000 a year as a freelancer in 2011 to it dropping $23,000 in 2012, then down to $12,000 in 2013, now down to just like around $10,000. The way that the industry has treated her, the way that her colleagues have treated her, the way that editors at different publications have treated her, she testified that an editor at a magazine said, hey, we'll publish you, but only under another name.
Oh, goodness.
That just because Furlong was calling, you know, what he's on trial for, like saying that she is on a personal vendetta against him, saying that she has a history of being a lousy journalist who's got a problem with male authority figures in sports, saying that she filed sex abuse complaints with the RCMP on behalf of her sources in the story, mm-hmm. which to my knowledge, there is no proof of whatsoever. She says it's a complete fabrication. And as we heard in that clip pack where he, you know, that's a very pointed accusation. I mean, it's insinuated, but it seems very clear to me that he's saying, I was told that for money I can make this go away.
Yeah, I'd never actually heard that until you just played that clip. Like, I hadn't heard that at all.
I mean, that's a crazy smear. And I think, you know, as we speak, she's going to get cross-examined, and then I have to imagine Furlong's going to be on the stand. I'm guessing that they're going to argue that, no, that's not what we meant by that. But that's the meaning I took from it. And, you know, any editor looking at this is like, wow, like, is this some scurrilous, you know, completely amoral person who, A, has a vendetta. But which is it? Does she have a vendetta against male authority figures in sports, or is she trying to get like a payday by blackmailing him? Like,
right.
Whatever it is.
I guess that could be part of her vendetta.
I guess so.
Taking their money.
I guess so. Whatever it is, like either this industry mm-hmm. bought that story or they were so put off and scared by those allegations that they just didn't want to be associated with her because it's true. She can't get published, you know.
Well, I mean, people who had worked with her before and had done good work with her before who didn't assign her after that, that is not cool.
Yeah.
For someone who hadn't worked with her, I could see them being scared because that's a big deal. Like if she had actually accused him of those things without any sort of verification or without any foundation, like that's who would want to work with that person, right? And if you'd never worked with her before,
yeah.
That's all you would know about her.
I know, but these are professionals. And what she is telling the court right now, she's opening up her books and saying, here's what I did. Mm-hmm. I went up to Burns Lake. I flew to Ireland. Here are the number of people I interviewed. Here are the three times that in person I went to John Furlong for comment. So she is basically like subjecting herself to like, you know, you want to call me a lousy journalist? Let's look at what I did.
Yeah.
And so that information is stuff that she shared with me when she was in this room on this show. Mm-hmm. It's information that she would share with any editor who was like, look, I've got my doubts about you as a journalist right now. And so, you know, the question that this brings up for me, it's like was suggested by what you were saying, is as we move towards more reliance on freelancers for the biggest stories, mm-hmm. you know, for investigative stories, what do we owe them? What do news organizations owe them? Because you can't have it both ways, where you've gutted your own internal investigative teams.
Yeah.
You need these freelancers to bring you these stories. And then as soon as their stuff comes under scrutiny, and that's what happens every time, you assault the credibility of the journalist. Mm-hmm. And when they're a freelancer, it's a lot easier to assault the credibility of a freelancer than it is some, I am with the CBC, I am of this newspaper. It's just, oh, this is just some, who is it? It's just some freelance writer with a grudge, some hack who, you know.
Well, and I think also that's why a lot of younger freelancers, like, you need to know if you're writing something at all sensitive, you need to make sure that you are covered by their libel coverage. Like, that needs to be a conversation that you have with your editor in the contract that says they own every word that you write, you know, throughout the universe, and something that's not invented yet. You need to say, like, what happens? What happens to this? And you need to push it. And, like, I know that people are really eager to get their stuff published, but it is not worth it. It is not worth it if it's something that's dangerous or sensitive.
No, I mean, she got paid $2,500 for the story, and she's, you know, $150,000, I think, more in the whole for everything combined. I think it's more, closer to $200,000, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's a legal question. Are you covered legally? But I feel like it's a moral question and a professional question as well. Like, what does it mean when an editor commissions a piece, edits a piece, signs off on a piece for publication? And, you know, I got into trouble before. I didn't have a clear sense of where the Georgia Strait was on this, because it's true their libel insurance didn't cover them, but they knew that, and she knew that, mm-hmm. and she was willing to go through with that risk.
Okay.
So she went ahead with the story knowing that it would be on her. And that's probably out of the hands of the editors at the Georgia Strait. That has to do with their libel insurance. But, you know, I think it's a question for everybody to be asking. It's like, what is right? What do we owe these people for whom we rely on for the stories that we publish?
Right. She fundraised for some of her.
Yeah.
So how did that go?
I think she's done, like, a continuous fundraising online, in person. She's, you know, she's been relying on friends, and she's got a partner who I think has subsidized part of the case. Yeah. So we'll see how it plays out. Anything else on that one?
I don't think so. I mean, that was weird for me because they
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, but that can't go in. They said to me a million times, this is like...
Oh, we can't talk about it on the show?
I don't think so. I mean, I didn't sign anything.
It was just his team?
Yeah, but
we
they...
We can totally talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, so...
Let's talk about it, and then you'll have like a couple hours, and we won't use it if you don't want us to.
Well, because it just, I would like to talk about it. I mean, what can they do? Nothing, I guess, right?
No, how can they? You can't approach somebody with something and then say, we're gagging you on this. You haven't signed anything.
Because it was pretty awful.
Yeah. What happened?
Because what they wanted to know.
So this is John Furlong's team.
Yeah.
So you told me earlier that John Furlong's legal team approached you to be a witness for the defense.
Yeah, well, they asked me to be an expert witness. And so they sent to me, there's a former Toronto Star editor who Laura Robinson's team asked to be the expert witness. So they sent me his analysis of her work, and it looked totally airtight to me. And so I wasn't really sure why they would contact me, because I don't know what in my journalism profile seems to say that what I might say would defend him. But I guess I wrote a column for the Globe about the scandal at the University of Virginia and about the journalist there.
The Rolling Stone rape story.
Yeah.
It kind of fell apart.
Yeah. And it looked like that the woman who the sexual assault was not the way it was presented in the story, or if it even existed.
Well, they failed on the most basic test of, did you ask the other side for their side of it?
Yes. Right. Which is, I guess, why I said that about Laura Robinson, because, like, that is the most basic test. And she had tried to talk to John Furlong multiple times.
Yeah.
So this is not really related to the journalism. But what his lawyer wanted to know is, did I think that someone who stood to make financial gain in something would be a good source? And what she meant was that the payments that were going out to, I guess, former residents of residential schools, or people who could prove that they had been sexually assaulted or molested in the schools, did stand to get a percentage of money from the federal government. It hasn't been very much, by the way. Like, some people I heard got like $400 or something. So I guess what she wanted me, or what she was hoping would happen on the stand, is that someone would say that people said, either to Laura Robinson or in general, that John Furlong had sexually abused them in order to get a payment from this fund set up for
that just doesn't
indigenous
test
victims.
A certain like initial smell test, in that saying that to a court, mm-hmm. or saying that to a journalist rather, for their story, doesn't get you any money. Saying that to the, you know, what is it, the Truth and Reconciliation, you know,
yes,
that might get you a payment if you are this fraudulent accuser. But
yes,
saying that to Laura Robinson doesn't get you anything.
Right.
And the second smell test problem is that that's not what Laura Robinson was reporting.
Yes. Right.
Right.
So, I mean, the thing that upset me about it, too, is that, like, when you're talking about the sexual abuse of children, it's like, I don't know. You know, my understanding of these memories is that sometimes people don't remember what happened to them. And, you know, maybe they've been addicts for a long time because of things that happened to them. And to suggest that it just seemed very much like me more picking apart vulnerable people for not a very good cause.
Yeah. And that's what they were. And this would have been a paid position as an expert witness for Furlong's.
I guess so. We never got to the point of talking money or anything. Like, basically, once his team started asking me questions along those lines, I said that I didn't think anything that I could offer would be of use to his defense. And we sort of ended it there.
And they asked you to not talk about that?
Yes.
Right. Do they, like, that's, yeah. That's
I didn't sign anything, so, you know.
I wonder who they got.
Here comes my libel suit now.
Well, it sounds like you've got the full email exchange for it. So,
yeah.
I guess we'll find out who agreed to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Sunday Times of London reported that Russia and China teamed up and cracked the encryption in Edward Snowden files, exposing the identities of MI6 agents who the UK had to pull out of active service on the field. And here is what the reporter who brought that expose to light had to say when he was questioned about his story.
I'm joined now by Tom Harper. He is the home affairs correspondent for the Sunday Times, who is reporting this story. How do senior officials at number 10 Downing Street know that these files were breached?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, George. We just publish what we believe to be the position of the British government at the moment.
So essentially, you're reporting what the government is saying, but as far as the evidence, you know, to substantiate it, you're not really able to comment or to explain that at this point, right?
No.
This is the kind of reporting that has single-handedly destroyed the credibility of journalism around the world. That clip that you played from the reporter for the Sunday Times is the funniest thing I've ever heard. You ask him, are you only just repeating claims from the government? And he says, oh, no, we have many sources. That journalist is a liar who's doing nothing but writing down what his government friends tell him to and then giving them anonymity to protect it. It's a ridiculous story.
Well, we got to hear Glenn Greenwald's British accent there. Okay, so this is what happened in Canada with that story. There was a Reuters wire service report that presented that Sunday Times story in the cowardly way that secondary sources often do. And the headline, which ran on CBC.ca, the original headline, read, Russia, China, crack Edward Snowden files, UK pulls out spies, report. So we're not reporting this.
Mm-hmm.
We're reporting that there exists a report.
Right.
This is consistent with what the security establishment has been trying to smear Snowden with from the start, which is this guy's a traitor and he's putting lives at risk. It's a very shocking, startling headline that really transforms how people might think of Edward Snowden. Is he a hero? Is he a patriot? Or is he a traitor? And it just turned out to be complete bullshit.
Right.
I mean, it looks like it's bullshit. And Greenwald dissected that mm-hmm. Sunday Times mm-hmm. report on The Intercept on a number of points. I think he discredited it. He wrote that this pertains to MI6 agents that had to be removed after mm-hmm. this. Well, the MI6 agents are not mentioned in any of the Snowden files, according to his colleague Ryan Gallagher, who's like read them all. And then the number of Snowden documents that apparently Snowden had taken from the NSA, that number was wrong. And then I think the most damning thing that Greenwald got into in this Sunday Times story was that when Glenn Greenwald's husband, David Miranda, was detained by authorities, well, in the Sunday Times story, it reports that he had just met with Edward Snowden in Moscow when he was detained and he was carrying classified documents. Well, like that is actually demonstrably false.
Right.
He had never met Edward Snowden. He wasn't coming from Moscow. He didn't have any. Like, and in fact, the Sunday Times removed that detail from their original story without any correction.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's so embarrassing.
Very embarrassing. as embarrassing as that CNN interview you heard with the reporter,
yeah.
who essentially just admits, like, well, this is what the government told us and that's what we ran,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is one thing when it's like, okay, if there's an official government position about something, then that is newsworthy. And whether it's –
well, then you name the person who's saying it to you.
That's it.
Right.
That's it. So as the story is gradually revealed to be like very likely a bullshit story, CBC – is making changes to the Reuters story that they picked up. At a certain point, they change the headline.
Mm-hmm.
And the new headline is, journalists slam article claiming mm-hmm. Russia and China cracked Edward Snowden files.
So the complete opposite.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the complete opposite,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. It's fine to make a mistake, and it's great to correct that mistake, or I shouldn't say correct, but it's great to move to the truth from a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But – when the CBC headline says that the original story has been slammed,
mm-hmm.
they neglect to mention that it's a story that they essentially picked up.
Right.
There's no retraction. There's no correction. It's like it never existed.
Right.
What do you think about that?
I think generally you shouldn't take things down at all because it opens you up to this kind of criticism. I mean, I don't even like to take down tweets. Because I think what's more important is if I see something even, you know, on a very basic place like Twitter that seems too shocking or too good to be true, it's really important to look into it. Again, so you don't take something down. If you want to make a correction, you make a correction. And that correction should link people to your original mistake. And at the bottom of the mistake, which should stay up, it should have like a bold sort of like correction with a link to the fix. And I sort of stole this idea from Kelly McBride, who's the ethics writer or the ethics mind at the Poynter Institute. And so she said, basically, you should never take anything down. But if you do take it down, you shouldn't just disappear it. You should have the URL direct to either a blank page or a page that explains why it was taken down. And then you should also on your site have a permanent sort of like code of conduct about making corrections and about taking things down that people can always refer to if they want to, because you want to be transparent. And the main thing is that you want your audience to trust you. And so, yes, as you said, everyone makes mistakes. And so what you need to do is fix those in a grown up and professional way.
Yeah. And there are standards in print journalism around, and every paper has its policies around, when do you correct? When do you update? When do you have a clarification? When do you,
right.
But just like disappearing something is pretty much the worst thing you could do.
Mm-hmm.
I asked the CBC, like, okay, what happened here? And they gave me kind of like this sort of like web baffle gab about like, no, we didn't disappear anything and there's no correction needed, no retraction needed. Marissa Nelson is a senior online producer at CBC.ca told me, well, we don't publish like a magazine or a newspaper. I mean, this is the web. So the quote is, we publish iteratively, updating and evolving as the news evolves.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's interesting. So can you send me a copy of the original piece that it evolved from? And then she just hasn't responded to that.
Right.
So I think that this is just another way to pretend that it never happened. And like mm-hmm. people are very forgiving of error if you just own up to it. I think that like I don't want to blame it all on Marissa Nelson. I think that like, again, mm-hmm. it reflects an environment where it's very difficult in a bureaucratic environment for somebody to say, we probably should have given more scrutiny to that Wire story before
was
we published
it. Was the CBC the only one that put it up?
No, it was widely carried. I haven't had a close look at who else in the Canadian media put it up. But that's the one that got attention because – and it's the Streisand effect. It came to my attention with readers saying, you got to look into this because they just switched around the headlines.
Yeah.
And it was the number one story on CBC.ca that day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just worth like flagging it here, I think. But it brings up another big question too, which is one of the main, you know, or Greenwald's main complaint mm-hmm. about the original Sunday Times story is that the reporter was just taking anonymous comments from a government source and saying, well, you're a government source, so it's good enough for me. When you give a government official anonymity, you got to ask yourself, why does that government official want anonymity? And it was an interesting one for me because I just heard Seymour Hersh
mm-hmm.
speak in Halifax, you know, legendary investigative reporter who exposed the My Lai massacre in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And he's under fire now because he has a report that relies heavily on anonymous senior government officials or spooks who gave him information that the Osama bin Laden execution didn't happen the way the White House says it happened. And he gave anonymity to his sources, and that story has been criticized. Do I have a double standard because I happen to believe the Seymour Hersh story is true and the Sunday Times story about Snowden is false? I don't think so, as much as I can try to parse my mm-hmm. own biases here. The difference is that when Seymour Hersh was granting anonymity to a senior government source, like there's no obvious way that it helps Washington to have their own narrative completely contradicted. Mm-hmm. But it completely, in the case of the Snowden story, it absolutely helps the security establishment's position to paint Snowden as a traitor who exposed these government agents and spies and anti-terrorist fighters to danger. If you're contradicting your government to bring the truth to a reporter, you would need anonymity. If you are
agreeing with them.
Yeah.
This is a terrible guy and he's made us all unsafe.
A terrible guy and Russia and China have cracked this stuff and we've had to pull agents off the field and he's a traitor. Don't use my name. Like, what is that? Like the only – like it's just the Occam's razor. Like the reason why that person wants anonymity is probably because they don't want to be accountable for what they said, which might be because what they said isn't true.
Mm-hmm. Don't take stuff down.
That's your Canada Land Shortcuts. I hope you enjoyed it. You can always email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read them all. I respond when I can. I am on Twitter at Jesse Brown. Denise, where can people find you?
I am also on Twitter at Balcassoon, which has two S's and two O's. And you can also read The Ethnic Isle at theethnicisle.com.
And you'll find a link to their Patreon there. Our website is canadalandshow.com. Our crowdfunder is patreon.com/canadaland. The next episode of Canada Land will be up on Monday. The next episode of Canada Land Commons will be up on Tuesday. I make this show with Katie Jensen. If you like this show, support it.
Oh my gosh, I think I should have had coffee. I'm sorry if I was dumb.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures. And it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.